Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
That countdown always makes me giggle.
I know. Here we go.
What's going on, Michael?
Not too much, Dane. How are you doing this beautiful? Finally got some nice weather in Northeast Ohio. It took forever. Sunday was just miserable. Like 2 inches of rain down here. The Mill Creek Golf Course right across the street from me was the one course was partially flooded, it looked like. So, yeah, it was very exciting.
It's been going well. It's been very cold, of course. How are you doing, Michael? What's going on with the Metzingers?
Not too much. Just living the dream.
So I always get – there's Tommy, there's Michael, there's Matthew, and there's one more.
Yeah, we all have our names. We've got – so Tom's Fireman Metz.
Okay.
There's me.
What are you?
Actually, I don't know what the hell I am. There's me, there's Dr. Metz, and then there's Big Head Metz.
Which one's that one?
That's Christopher. He's the young one. He's the one who likes to troll from time to time. Yeah.
Yeah, I like to troll too. He's a good guy.
He's good. You are the master troller, and I've been trying to teach my wife when she, kind of dukes it out on social media. If you say something, instead of responding, just give the old care emoji, because I think it goes a long way. I'm a big fan of the care emoji.
I like OK Boomer. I like using OK Boomer, even if the person isn't a boomer.
I was going to say, what if they're not a boomer?
No, you just call them a boomer. You know, that's the best way to do it.
We got some commentary in the chat. Let's see. My cousin Anthony is joining us from Florida. Welcome, Anthony. And then Tommy Metz is on. Fireman Metz is here. Dane, Fireman did you Metz. Just win solos on Warzone?
Yeah, 360 no scope, bro. I got my Mountain Dew. I was no scoping some noobs, calling in some backup.
It's funny, when we first started doing this podcast, before we did it on Facebook Live, I had headphones just like that before. Yeah. I spent whatever $80 on this thing.
Do you know what these headphones say? They say I fuck. Yeah, that's right. You only winners wear headphones like this, Michael.
Yeah, those are pretty intense. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
yeah. They're just headphones. There's not even a microphone component, right?
Yeah, there is a microphone component, but like fell off, right? It popped off. So
interesting. I like the look. It works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on, Mike? What's
not
going on?
Too much. Not too much. Big news yesterday with Governor Mike DeWine, who, as I've said numerous times, he's on his own little political island and his own little political world. You never know what he's going to say. Yeah. I was half expecting a rah-rah speech last night and like maybe a moving of the threshold from 50 cases or whatever the heck the number was. It 150 cases per 200,000 or something like that?
It was over 50.
50. Okay. I thought, in talking to some people, I thought the threshold would be maybe changed to vaccinations because they were slowing quite a bit. And when he stopped and paused, and maybe I'll play the clip because I watched it a little bit today at work, where he's like, it's time, Ohio, or whatever. We need to get Tommy Metz on for his impersonation of Mike DeWine. It's sensational. He hasn't done it in a while. Tommy Metz, I hope you're still tuning in. And maybe you could come on and do your impersonation, like the one he has it spot on, actually. But so that was actually a pleasant surprise yesterday. I wasn't expecting that. I thought he was gonna hold out until maybe June 21st instead of June 22nd when the legislature was gonna overrule him.
Yeah. Is COVID still going on? Is that still a thing?
Depends on where you live. And
So what I like to do is I work in an office building, and of course I've been back to the office since June of last year. When we're in there, we don't wear masks or anything like that, but you have to wear a mask like to get into the building and then get in the elevator. And then once I get to my floor, I can take it off. But for the last like 2.5 weeks, I haven't been wearing masks.
Really?
In and out of the office building. No. And like some of the restaurants, I'm like, I'm not doing it anymore. I never wore masks outside. Did you wear masks outside? Apparently,
no, I never quite that. Understood that one. The only time I wore it was I had to go on an audit in Florida, and this was 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walked on the street by the restaurants, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to or not, because like the signs outside, because you could eat outside or eat inside. So I would put it on there, but that was literally the only time outside I ever put it on. I never understood this whole idea of wearing a mask outdoors. Like, who am I going to get real close to outdoors?
Right. Yeah. Well, when I would go in the winter in Cleveland, when I would go from like the office building to a restaurant, sometimes I would keep the mask up just because it was so cold and there's a lot of wind, but it was more of a, it wasn't because I was afraid of the virus or even because I wanted to, it was just because like, oh, I don't want to like take it down and then put it back up. And it's cold. Right. But, so the DeWine lifted the orders ahead of his 50 cases per 100,000. Clearly I think that's the right call. I always thought COVID was, thought it was real. I thought it was a virus, but I thought that there's this extreme political reaction to it. And I think, you know, one of the things I'd like to talk about are the consequences of COVID. And I think we're seeing it. There are two that immediately come to mind that people have not really contemplated. And one is the education and all the time lost in the education system from people who had to learn remotely, which really doesn't work. It can work in certain cases and that, but by and large, I don't think it works. And they've estimated that there's like up to 10 to 15% of kids are not coming back to school. And those are the ones that just stop showing up. There are kids that showed up and they've fallen massively behind in education schooling. So we've really, really harmed our younger generation.
Correct.
But the inflation, so we need to have an episode on inflation. The inflation is real. It's like it's mid single digits if you believe the official government figures. And I do. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I always think that they kind of understate the real problem. But like used car prices have skyrocketed. Housing prices have skyrocketed. The housing market's insane right now. Gas prices have skyrocketed. And like all that, like we're in this weird scenario where we're paying people not to work. So the supply is curtailed. And we've just printed money in money. And now inflation is just, it's just taking off. And here's the really scary. I got 2 points to make and I'll stop. I know this is kind of a tangent from DeWine, but I'm going to loop it in. Just hang with me. The scary thing about inflation is that once it starts, it's hard to stop. It's like, what's that Pringles? Once you pop, the fun don't stop. Yeah, it's just like Pringles. And if we remember, the last time we had really severe inflation in the United States was in the 70s. And do you know how inflation ended in the 70s, Michael? Are you aware?
Into the 80s?
Well, it did. But what happened was Paul Volcker, who was actually appointed by Carter, was the Federal Reserve chairman. He jacked up interest rates. So if inflation was 15%, he'd raise them up to like 17, 18. And if inflation went to 20, he'd go to 25. And he caused an extremely severe recession in 1981 and 1982. It was up to that point the most severe recession we've ever had. It was unemployment rates skyrocketed. It was horrible, right? And that finally broke the back of inflation, but it caused a massive, massive recession. So when I see all this inflation perking up, it's like inflation begets more inflation. The only way to stop it is through higher interest rates, but that could have disastrous effects on the economy if the economy's not ready. So my hot take Because the other big development, yet today, the CDC announced you don't have to wear masks anymore. Masks are done. They said if you're not vaccinated, you still have to wear masks. But if you're vaccinated, no more masks. You're done. Okay. And I think that was a political decision. None of the science changed. This is one of the really dumb things. Moderates and centrists are like to pretend that, like, oh, we just follow science and we're really apolitical. But, like, what science changed between yesterday and today? None. Here's what happened. The White House is freaking the F out about inflation and the economy. And they're like, shit, we need to get people back to work. We need to get this economy moving. It's the only way we're going to stop inflation. And we need to go back to normal. CDC issue the order, masks are done. COVID's done. So it's canceled. It's over. That's my hot take.
It is kind of fascinating because I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the CDC came out with guidance where they said you didn't need to wear a mask outside, but like nothing else changed. And everybody's like, well, what's the big to do about this guidance that came out from the CDC? And I find it to be rather remarkable. They went from that pretty extreme view that even if you're vaccinated, you still got to do this stuff to this now. And the only thing that really does ring a bell is just political. And I think all along, once it became available to everybody, the state and federal government should have done a better job of saying, okay, you want an end goal, you know, within, you know, again, throw a threshold at whether it's 40% or 50%. Once 40% of people get at least one shot, we're going to end these orders. And at that point in time, it's on you. It's the supply is there for you to get a vaccine. It's going to be your choice in time. But we've seen, especially with Israel, I tweeted this a few days ago, like once the numbers started hitting that 40 to 50% range of people vaccinated, the numbers plummeted very quickly. So I think it was only a matter of time. I'm just kind of shocked that they came out with the guidance they did today. And again, I think the only thing that really does ring a bell is politics. I'd be curious to be watching like MSNBC or CNN tonight to be hearing what they have to say about it. Because, you know, I was just happy with the wine lifting the orders effective June 2nd. I wasn't expecting this. I just honestly figured this was going to go on all summer and they were just going to kind of beat around the bush.
I did too. Yeah. No, I think the inflation numbers really spooked everybody. Those inflation numbers are real. They're severe. And it's the strongest inflation we've had on record. And I think they got really, really scared. And a lot of the inflation is being driven, not all of it, but a lot of it is a fear over COVID. And one of the things about masks is masks, I personally don't think there's any evidence to show that they're very effective on a macro level, on a micro level, mitigating the virus. I think if they had a beneficial effect, it was marginal at best. That said, the key thing about masks is that they were a constant reminder of the virus, of the pandemic, right? And the importance of masks is that they were a symbol of you should be scared because these are uncertain times. The issuing of the guidance to drop the mask, such the radical about face, shows to me that this administration, the public health authorities, they want it over. They want this done. They are no longer scared that it's over. Okay. You're not going to be hearing about COVID in like a month or two. Right. And the reason they want it done is because with the mask on, and if the media stops talking about it, people will not think about COVID anymore. And hopefully they can kind of return to normal, whether it's, you know, going back to their normal shopping and consumption behaviors, but also working. Right. One thing we could talk about is the fact that so many people are unemployed, and there are labor shortages everywhere throughout the country, and that's driving inflation, right? Like you can't find workers. Excuse me, I don't think it's so bad in Ohio, but in some parts of the country, you just can't find people because they won't work, and because they have the pandemic unemployment insurance boosted wages.
Yeah, and I will give credit where credit's due. I did listen to Governor DeWine's press conference today, and I think. I wish it would have been sooner, but 6 weeks, I think today, effective June 26th, Ohio is no longer going to participate in the additional 300. And yeah. I know last week he instituted a policy where Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services, which administers unemployment compensation in the state of Ohio, it instituted or reinstated the work requirement. So people who were collecting unemployment during the pandemic weren't required to show support that they were looking for a job. Well, that's going to change. And I thought there might be something, and I could be wrong. If somebody knows the exact law, please correct me. But I thought there's something if you apply for a job and they offer it to you, that terminates the unemployment. I could be wrong on that. I don't know if that sounds legitimate or not, but there are a lot of jobs out there. I'll even say this, you know, I dabble in quite a bit of fast food throughout the course of a month. Yeah, and at the McDonald's in Canfield, which I would say used to be the worst McDonald's in the Mahoning Valley. Now I think probably one of the best. Not that that matters. They have a sign on their window that they were paying people $13 an hour to work at a McDonald's. And I would see some of these people defending this whole idea of the unemployment and the additional compensation and saying, well, these people, these places aren't paying enough. Well, there's always been a supply of workers working in those fast food type restaurants or just restaurants in general, high school, college age kids, or just people who just don't have a college education, maybe don't have a trade, a skill of some sort. There's always people to fill those jobs. So this idea that, oh, it's because they're not paying enough. They're paying $13 an hour at McDonald's. I mean, those are jobs that would typically pay minimum wage, $13 an hour. I went to Wendy's today. They had a little post-it thing in there about having people, if you apply and are accepted, there's a $100 sign-in bonus, and then there's referral bonuses for existing members to hire to get new people to come in and work there. So, I mean, this idea that businesses aren't paying a lot, I mean, it's greatly – I'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of businesses right now that are paying at the bare minimum wage in the state of Ohio. So I'm happy to see these changes, and hopefully within the next 6 weeks or so, we're going to see even more people back to work and less of these looking for worker signs in the windows of businesses.
Yeah. And you know, so a couple more points and we can move on. But the goal of raising wages is good, right? Like, we want higher wages. We want people to be able to have a decent life. But there's two ways to go about it. One is through creating strong demand for labor, right? And stop importing more workers through legal and illegal immigration. And that creates real wage gains, right, that are outpacing price increases. But this other way is kind of just to order higher wages or to pay people not to work. That's not good, right? And I think, you know, if you get a 10% wage, but inflation's up 10%, you've got no real wage increase. And the evidence of this is if you look at the Trump economy, the 3 years before COVID, real wages were growing, especially for the workers at the bottom, at the strongest pace in over 20 years, right? And that's real, not nominal gains, but real gains. That means it's outpacing inflation. There's a reason, right, as a society, we don't just order everybody to have a $50 minimum wage, right? Because that would cause rampant price inflation, and it would screw with the entire monetary system, and you wouldn't actually get better earnings. So there's a good way to do this and a bad way, and right now we're doing it the bad way. It looks like we got a question from Tommy Metzinger. So, Dane, is there hope we can stave off inflation still, or is it a foregone conclusion? I don't know. The Fed's saying it's transitory. They are smarter than me, so if they're saying it's transitory, I'm inclined to agree with them. I don't have a good case to disagree. But the Fed's been wrong before, and economists, if there's anything you know about them, they're usually wrong. So if it's not transitory, it could be scary. I mean, one of the things about inflation is it kind of begets inflation. So lumber prices go up.
Oh, have you seen those, by the way?
Yeah, I know. Oh, they've skyrocketed.
It's
right?
Insane.
So it means your housing prices go up. It means your construction prices go up. So it just kind of ripples through. And in the 70s, we got into runaway inflation, right? It's a feedback cycle. Your raw material prices go up. You raise prices on everything, which causes, you know, a loop where the people consuming those, they have to raise prices, right? So accountants, you have nothing to do with lumber. But if everything goes up 10%, it's like, well, you know, to stay competitive, we have to raise our prices by 10%, right? And then somebody else is like, well, crap, if they're going up 10, I might as well increase 11. And the other thing inflation does is in an inflationary environment, prices tomorrow are going to be higher than today. So if you're like, do I buy lumber today or do I buy it tomorrow? You buy it today, right? And that further pushes up prices because that's how shortages develop, because it's like you're rapidly pushing up demand and you're just front loading all that consumption. It's not good. It's not good at all. And uh, I, I if it's not transitory, we're going to be in a really, really bad state.
I think the thing of concern is now I put up on the screen a chart from the this is a random website, tradingeconomics.com, but essentially it gets the economic data from – what does that FRED stand for, by the way? By the same
– it's the Federal Reserve Economic Data.
Okay. I'm on that quite a bit at work. But anyway, Here's a chart of the U.S. inflation rate, and right now it's at 4.2%. I think – is it the most recent quarter or month? Anyways, look at that. This is a 10-year chart on the screen for those watching. And as you can see, this is the most noticeable spike that we've seen in inflation over the past decade. That it went from what virtually nothing a year ago to 4% in four quarters. So it's something to be of great concern. I know you talked about lumber prices. My dad made it a big point. He did a project. He was replacing his roof, and he had lumber. He had a number in mind. I think it was like $9 for a certain piece of lumber that if you go to Home Depot right now, it's around $42 just a year later. So it's insane right now, the price of building materials especially. But I think maybe you referenced it, going to the grocery store, prices are up. Was it you?
Insane. I think it was me, yeah.
Yeah, so it's hitting us across the board. So it's something to watch, and I definitely think that if they don't address this quickly. And I think that maybe partially is why the CDC lifts this order, because they need to get people back to work. They need to get things moving again.
Sorry, I may cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this just proves public health authority. Oh, here's the lesson for all this, right? We moderates and centrists operate under a framework where there's like an objectivity, and that our bureaucrats are very objective, and that they're kind of impartial. They look at the science, and then they determine and they make the best, recommendation. They're experts, right? And the reality is, and it's not to impugn the motives of these people, but they're biased like anybody else, and they're subject to incentives just like any other human being. And our public health authorities, as is the entirety of the bureaucracy, are political actors. They're trying to get more resources for themselves, and they are also susceptible to political pressure. And I believe that this order came from the White House. I think a couple of days ago we got the inflation numbers, shocked everybody to the upside. The order came from the White House, and all of a sudden it's like the dominoes started to fall, and the CDC completely reversed what they were saying just a few days ago. There's no new science. There's no new evidence, right? None, right? Like, come on, don't yank my chain.
And it wasn't like they gradually did this either. I mean, it's just like that.
Yeah. So that's it. That's what's going on. They're political actors. And it's not that, again, it's not that these people are bad people. It's just like, keep this in mind when we're talking politics. This goes back to Ohio. And Ohio was like, the debate over should the legislature have a say? Yes, they should. Yes, they're political, but they're bringing in other voices in addition to the public health authorities. The public health authorities should have a strong voice. We should listen to them, but they shouldn't have the only voice in the room, right? First among equals, but the people should have their say. So I was glad that the legislature passed the bill, basically giving them the override over any public health authority or order. I think it was the right move.
Correct. Tommy Metz in the chat says it was OSB plywood, which is exactly what my dad was using last summer. And the price has gone up more than four times in the course of a year. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today on tonight's episode, that is this. First off, I want to talk about Mike DeWine and then kind of tie it into a potential matchup against Jim Renacci in the GOP gubernatorial primary would it be March or May? I forget how it works with some of the primaries and the timing of them, but it would be sometime next spring probably next spring. And so we've talked about DeWine. I know some of the most ardent Trump people that we're Facebook friends with hate his guts. And I would say, I think their hatred really came out during COVID. I think if you remove COVID from Mike DeWine, policy-wise, I tend to agree with a decent chunk of what he's done. I don't really think of many things that I necessarily disagree with, but there is a hatred among, I would say, the hardcore Trump supporters towards Mike DeWine. for his handling of COVID-19. And I think I just want to have a discussion on, will that impact his chances of reelection? And perhaps was that a contributing factor to him raising or releasing these health orders effective June 2nd?
Yes. Yes. I think the answer is yes. This is all political, right? So full disclosure, Mike DeWine sent my kids little softballs, a blue one and a pink one, because Shanley wrote a letter to the governor and he sent Alexander a little blue softball and Scarlett a little pink softball. So I have received gifts from Mike DeWine. I am not a neutral party. Here's the reality. I don't share a lot of hatred towards someone that a lot of people have. The people that I hate in the Republican Party are people like Liz Cheney. I don't hate DeWine like a lot of people do. I am glad he's ending these orders. I think he was in a tough spot because the reality is, I mean, I'm not a big COVID person, but a lot of people out there were. A lot of Republican voters were very scared of COVID. A lot of people, independents and Democrats and they're citizens and they have a voice. So I thought he was trying to play, you know, he wasn't as extreme as in New York or a California or even a Michigan, right?
Yeah, Michigan.
But he wasn't as loose as a Florida or a Texas. So he kind of played in the middle. And I think that's because of the population. So I don't fault him for that, even though I disagree with all of this. Right. I think he should have lifted it earlier, but he's doing it now. Can't
better late than never.
Yeah. And I trust me, I'm the most anti COVID restriction stuff guy out there, but I can't get mad at DeWine because I feel like he's between a rock and a hard place. So I'm glad he's lifting it. I think he's lost, you know, I never used to think that he would lose the primary, but I do think it's possible now because there is a lot of anger and hatred towards Mike DeWine. And I don't share. I can see why people don't like him and I can see why people are mad and I'm sympathetic to those views. I don't share those views. I think he could be more conservative. I think he could be far more conservative on spending and on taxes. I think we're taxed way too much in Ohio. I think we need to dramatically cut the spending and taxes. So, I mean, I think we could get an even more conservative person there, but I don't hate DeWine is how I would put it. I do hate a lot of Republicans, but I don't hate DeWine.
So I'll say this. I think he's definitely more susceptible than he was pre-COVID to a possible primary challenge. I think the issue for the people who especially don't care for Mike DeWine is it's May 13th. Let's say this is next March. How much of our emotion, I mean, that's what, nine months away. Is that emotion of anger towards DeWine still going to be there? Because I don't think emotion alone is going to be enough to carry you. Actually, right now you might be able to get Renacci over the finish line because of the emotions and people very upset want to get over. But 9 months from now is a long period of time where, you know, perhaps there's some policy proposals, other things where he could kind of, I don't want to say make amends, but what have you, where he could show the Republican voters, like, listen, I am still your guy. You may not agree with me on everything. And I think he recognizes that a lot of Republicans don't agree with him on everything. But I do think in 9 months, the political world's going to change from how it is now. And I don't know how much of it, if you could run completely against him on COVID. Again, he's opening the state up come June. You could make an argument. We could have done it sooner. I mean, I get Florida. I love DeSantis. Trust me, I'm one of his biggest fans. But maybe some of the success of not having those orders were, you know, they do have a warmer climate. People are more prone to be outdoors where the spread is just not going to be there. Whereas in Ohio, people are inside and but that's another thing. So I get it. I've been critical of DeWine as of late on social media because I thought he was not going to do the right thing, which I thought was opening things up. And we talked about on the last podcast, we thought that once supply of vaccines had started to exceed demand, which we started seeing about 2 weeks ago, that was at that point in time when he needed to open things up. So from my perspective, at least he didn't wait to the whole 50 case threshold because I don't think that's going to occur for a while. Yeah. there's always going to be cases. There are going to be people who don't want to get the vaccine. But like he said in his speech yesterday, there comes a point in time when it's an individual's responsibility. And if somebody doesn't want to get the vaccine and they get COVID, it shouldn't cost the rest of society their lives anymore. They have the opportunity to get a vaccine, vaccines that are very effective based on the data that we have thus far. So we'll see. And here's the thing. I'm not anti-Renacci from a perspective of his policies or from a personal perspective. I've been Facebook friends with him for quite some time. I like him as a person. He's a good practicing Catholic that I agree with on plenty of issues. My issue with him is he lost, and he lost by 8 points in a state that is very red now. And he's 16 points to the left, or 16 points worse than Trump in 2016 and 2020. 12 points worse than how DeWine fared in 2018. So that's my concern. I get it, but my concern is, do we risk getting Renacci in there to have a possible upset and have Nan Whalen of Dayton running the state come 2022?
Renacci, I strongly agree with you, Mike. This is one of these areas where we're aligned, right? And I think Renacci, there's a lot I like about him. I think he's personally a good guy, but he ran a very poor campaign for Senate. He didn't have a ground game. He was not effective. And once you have that chance to run for Senate and you lose, right, to then come back and do another run, it's like you've got to have a really damn compelling reason.
And it's not like he just lost barely. I mean, 8 points is significant.
I mean, granted, I think there's some other Republicans
could. I don't disagree, but I think some other Republicans statewide could have fared better.
Agreed. I think he could have fared better had he run a better campaign. I don't think he ran. I don't know who his campaign manager was, but I think it was a poorly run campaign. I was on the ground in 2018. I think that's what it was, and it was just poorly run. He didn't have signs.
Yeah, no
basic stuff. No signs or anything. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm gonna play hands off on this one, and it's because I'm just kind of, I don't have a strong dog in this fight. Mr. DeWine sent my children softballs. I disagree with him on a lot of policies, so he's like neutral in my book. The softballs bring him up, the policies bring him down. Renacci's good on a lot of policies, but he's lost before, so he's neutral in my book. So I think they're both good individuals. I think they're decent people. I want to say this about Mr. DeWine. I think he's a decent man. I think he is a good person. Even if there have been times I've been frustrated with him or disagree with him, I do think he's a decent individual human being. So I don't know if that counts for anything these days.
Yeah.
There you go.
I see my mom's tuning in. She says she loves Governor DeWine, and he has done an excellent job handling the COVID-19 pandemic in Ohio. And I know my wife would agree with that line of thinking. Another note on Renacci.
I'm going to eat some fruit snacks.
Yeah, there you go. I had a banana. Another note on Renacci is there are a lot of candidates, let's say Josh Mandel, who's really trying to be this ultra Trump type candidate, loud, crazy things that strike to the emotions of people, Renacci is not that way at all, from what I've gathered. He's just, you know, he was a congressman, I believe, before he ran for Senate. He only served one or two terms. I think in like the Medina region. I think that's where he's from, is Medina County. Yeah. He's not really that type of guy. And anyways, why I bring this up is there is an NBC article today where Brad Parscale, who is a former Trump, was he campaign manager or something like that?
He was a horrible campaign manager, but at one point
he spent tons and tons and tons of money, and he lost. Anyways, there's an NBC article that he's helping Renacci a little bit. And in it, it referenced a pull from some outfit named Fabrizio. This is internal numbers, so take them with a grain of salt. I'd like to see some public polling on Ohio for a couple reasons between governor and Senate. But it had Governor DeWine's, let's see here, found that 52% viewed DeWine somewhat or very unfavorably, and 54% somewhat or strongly disapproved of his job performance. A plurality, 37% described DeWine as a liberal. And I think in a head-to-head, which I failed to put in here for some reason on this spreadsheet, he was up like Renacci was up 42 to 34 or something like that. But I guess my thought process here is these are Republican voters, and 54% disapprove. I'm not surprised. Like, if you did a statewide poll, his lowest numbers, DeWine's are going to come from Republicans. The thing is, we have open primaries. So an independent, if there are independents, which I think there's probably going to be quite a few who are probably very take a liking to DeWine, there's a good chance they're going to vote in the Republican primary. And if there's Democrats, let's say the Democrats, I'll say this, if you're Renacci, I think you want let me think this through. What was I trying to get? I think right now Nan Whalen's the only one who's running on the right now.
Tim Ryan.
Yeah. Well, no, we're talking about governor.
Oh, Tim Ryan, Senate. That's right. Yeah.
Nan Whalen's the only one running, I think, for the Democrats right now. If she's the only one running, I feel like you're going to have some Democrats crossing over for DeWine too. So I don't think we truly know what the electorate's going to look like for a primary, but I don't think it's necessarily be I don't necessarily disagree with these numbers with Republicans. I think it's the independents and Democrats that are going to cross over in the primary that are probably going to make DeWine hard to beat. I think it's going to be close based on how it is now. I still think I would give DeWine a slight edge, but in 9 months, whether it's slight or not, it's another story.
You know, you make a lot of really good points, Michael. You're pretty good at political analysis.
I try my best.
You should keep it up. The issue is if DeWine tracks to the left, he might get more of those independent Democratic voters in the primary, right? But he might also further alienate Republicans. So it's like, are you net ahead or are you net down? The thing is that I keep coming back to is primaries are really low turnout. And the people that tend to vote in primaries are usually the most motivated people, right? So like your average voter will not vote in a primary. The other people that vote in primaries are like partisans, like you and I will definitely vote in the primary. Most people don't vote in a primary. So for that reason alone, it would kind of give the edge. If Renacci can run a halfway decent campaign, he may be able to win, right? DeWine's got a very good machine. Keep in mind, like all the establishment Republicans are big DeWine people. He really has a huge Ohio machine. So that counts. So don't underestimate that. But I don't know. I think it's going to be it's tough to call. I, you know, if you asked me 6 months ago, I'd say no way can Renacci win. If you asked me 3 months ago, I'd say, I don't think Renacci can win. You're asking me now as I eat these fruit snacks, which are really good. I'm thinking, you know, there's a chance Renacci can win. It's not outside the realm of possibility. I see a path.
Yeah. The other quote from the NBC article referenced Trump, and it said something to the effect of citing the fact that Renacci fared so poorly in the 2018 Senate campaign. President Trump has no plans to endorse Renacci. It wasn't like a great endorsement in 2018 from Trump for Renacci. I'll say that. It's not like he did a ton of campaigning for him. But I don't know how much an endorsement really matters. But in this case, it might matter for Renacci. I think getting that would really push, you know, get those Trump voters out. But without it, I think it's hard for Renacci necessarily to say, like, hey, I'm the Trump candidate. I'm the one who's going to be, you know, however you want to say it, pro-American, pro-Trump America candidate. First. Yeah, America first. Sorry. America first candidate without that endorsement. And if Trump's on the fence about it and ultimately doesn't do it, I think that hurts Renacci quite a bit from a credibility perspective, from those people who are really pushing a Renacci candidacy. I guess I don't know where I'm going to be on this. I think right now I'm leaning towards DeWine. Doesn't mean I'm going to change. Again, I like a lot of Renacci has what he has to say. I do fear putting somebody out who lost 8 points statewide. Yeah. It's not like that was a primary thing. That was a statewide vote and he lost by 8 points. And that's think of how many people who are probably voted for Trump or voted Republican in 2016 or in 2018 for DeWine or in 2020 for Trump again, that ended up voting for Sherrod Brown. There had to be, you know, a decent chunk. Cause again, 8 point Republican, you know, wins there versus a 8 point Republican loss. That's significant in this state. And I have my concerns because we saw what Democrat governors have done in some of these other states, Pennsylvania and Michigan.
Horrible.
Would you really want that I'm not saying let's just settle for DeWine, but be careful what you wish for. I will say this. I'm just sort of surprised nobody else has jumped into this race on the governor's side.
I think it's because of the strength of the DeWine machine. DeWine really control and the Republican establishment, and the Ohio GP is very strong, and they're telling people do not run against DeWine. Renacci is kind of outside of the Republican establishment. Yeah, well, he is outside of the Republican establishment, so he's doing what he wants to do. But I think that's your answer why.
There's one more point I want to make, because today at work, at one point, I was talking to a coworker about this race, and you look at the map of the governor race and the Senate race in 2018. And you look at Mahoning County, where I live, Youngstown, Ohio. Renacci only got 39% of the vote against Sherrod Brown. He lost by 21% in this county that actually went for Trump and almost went for Trump in 2016. And it's those types of voters that he's going to need, especially in a Republican primary, to get him to beat DeWine. And he had a weak showing here, and think of how, again, there's a lot of people here who probably identify as Democrat that voted for Trump that still voted for Sherrod Brown there. Maybe that's more to say about Sherrod Brown than it is about Renacci. I just have my concerns with it. That's all.
No, I hear you. I totally hear you. I don't know. It should be an interesting race. The one thing, you know, actually, I think taxes and spending are going to become a big issue down the road. They're not really big now, but they're rising in importance. I think personally, I am not a doctrinaire economic conservative. I'm willing to disagree with the orthodoxy. Like, I'm pro tariffs, right? But I strongly believe that Ohio needs to completely eliminate the income tax and move to a sales tax system. I think we need strong tax reform. I think that the only way the Midwest, I think increasingly what you're going to see is that more and more states will be moving to 0% income tax as a way of competition. And the only way Ohio is going to stay relevant is that it has to compete on taxes. And the strength of its like a public system, like can it have an efficient government? If you look at Pennsylvania, I think we're lower taxed than Pennsylvania. We're lower taxed than Michigan, but we're not as low taxed as Indiana. They're growing extremely well. The Indiana economy is hot. We're not as low taxed as Florida or Texas or even a Tennessee, right? Tennessee's booming. Kentucky's doing well for itself. The Carolinas are doing great. So I think we need to get much more radical on taxes. And the one thing I like about Jim is he has created this Ohio Future Foundation, which is kind of like a think tank like pro-growth policies, right? And I think he might be more radical. Like if I voted for him, and again, I'm undecided, but if I could vote for him, if I voted for him, it would be because on taxes and spending and the need to kind of move the needle there.
Yeah, and I think he recognizes the fact that we as a state are falling behind compared to other states. And are we okay with that status quo or maybe a different direction's better for our economy? I know a year and a half ago, I attended it was a CPA event with the legislature down in Columbus, part of the Ohio Society of CPAs. And one of the representatives, I think she was from Southwest Ohio. I don't remember the name. She was a young girl, probably in her late 20s, early 30s. She was talking about how, you know, there is a movement, a push among some to, you know, try to get that state sales tax to replace the income tax, or maybe you know, greatly reduce the income tax and institute a greater sales tax, and with the ultimate goal of getting to what you suggest. So it's something to consider. I know from an accounting perspective, there are a lot of people who end up going down to Florida. They like the idea of not paying that the Ohio income tax. And obviously Florida, it's not just because of the weather. It's also because taxes, and people are saving a lot of money going down there. And so I agree. If you want to become more competitive, that's one way to do it.
Agreed. Okay. What else is on your docket, Michael?
So I guess we'll talk Liz Cheney in the future of the GOP, because I've had some
Liz Cheney. So Liz Cheney, that's a name.
I'll be the first to admit, I haven't listened to her speech. I kind of get a gist of what she's trying to say. But I guess, and here's where I'm probably going to upset some people, but that's fine. I think we've talked about this before, but hear me out here, people. And I've been getting into it with a coworker at work.
Good.
Gary, if you're listening.
Good.
We keep talking about the Republican Party moving forward as the party of Trump. Here's my concern. I don't want to throw all our eggs in one basket with this idea that Trump's going to be our candidate in 2024, because there are a lot of people out there, and I see them commenting on a lot of things, that truly believe he's going to be the candidate should he run. And maybe, you know, if he were to run at the age of 78, which, you know, 78 is pretty old.
That's what our current president said.
What's that? Yeah. And we question why somebody at that age would want this job. But hear me out here. I get it. People view him as the first president in perhaps in their lifetime that did what he promised to do. You know, whether it be building a wall and enforcing our immigration policies, reducing the corporate income tax, not starting any foreign wars, taking on China and having not using free trade, but, you know, instituting tariffs as a negotiating tactic. I get all that. And I actually agree with a lot of that. But to me, that is what our party should be focused on, is the policies and the ideas of Trump, and not willing to back down from the media and cave like a George W. Bush did, and that defined his second term of his presidency. I just think too much of it is on this idea of Trump as the person. I think it should be Trump as the policies. You can't have a party about a person. It should be a party of policies. And that's where I'm having concerns with people when I see him commenting on social media about this is all about Trump, 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 Trump. Should it all be about Trump? Should it be about his policies? Am I off base here? Where am I wrong, Dane?
I actually agree with you. I was going to disagree. I was going to make fun of you, but no, I agree. Look, I think Trump had a lot of strengths. He completely realigned the party, and we needed that. And but he's also very ineffective in certain areas. He listened too much to Jared Kushner. He endorses people that support him personally but disagree with him completely on policy. Look at his support of Elise Stefanik. Elise Stefanik is not a conservative. She's not an American First person. She is not a Trumper on policy, but she's very loyal to Trump personally, and he's supporting her. So policy absolutely matters. Laws and regulations matter. And by elevating her as opposed to other more conservative individuals, he's doing a disservice, right? So that's my problem with personal loyalty to Trump. Liz Cheney is a horrible human being. Liz Cheney is a narcissistic egomaniac. The only reason she's anywhere is because her last name is Cheney, right? That's nepotism. And the Republican Party, which should be the party of meritocracy, insisted that the number three in command in the House of Representatives be a woman. So it's not based on, you know, personal merit or ability. It's, oh, you're the right sex. Now you're a woman. We don't even know if Liz Cheney identifies as a woman. So, you know, Republicans, you want to be progressive. She doesn't
put her pronouns in.
No, she doesn't, right? So I think she identifies as a bomb, right? Because she's a neocon. So Liz Cheney should absolutely go. Cheneyism should be destroyed. Neoconism should be destroyed. Those types of people in the party need to go. Okay, Dick Cheney gave us nothing but a war in the Middle – two wars in the Middle East, Afghanistan's in Asia. A war in the Middle East then went absolutely nowhere. Okay, and he did nothing else to advance the conservative cause. And in fact, he gave us Barack Obama, the most left-wing president in generations, and now – Biden is in power. So the Cheneys need to go. You cannot be the leader of a party and attack the party, right? And Liz Cheney is one of these Republicans that shows contempt for the base, right? She thinks that Republican voters should do what Liz Cheney says, not that Liz Cheney should do what the voters say. So I am completely in favor of getting rid of her because she's an ineffective leader, right? And you know, one thing I really hate, I am all in favor of strong leaders. And if they happen to be a woman, I'm in favor of them. I named my daughter after Margaret Thatcher, right? Her middle name is Thatcher. And you look at somebody like Margaret Thatcher, she never whined about being a woman, right? And when people picked on her, she never said, oh, it's because I'm a woman and all this. And that's one of the reasons why I really admire her. in Liz Cheney, when she's being criticized, she's like, oh, I'm a woman. I'm a woman. They're criticizing you because they know it's because you're contemptible, Liz Cheney. It's because the only reason you're in power is because you have your father's last name. You're mediocre. You're like Meghan McCain. Meghan McCain is mediocre and kind of dumb. But the only reason she's anywhere, like we even know who she is because of her father, right? It's not because of her own achievements. What has she done? Absolutely nothing. What has Liz Cheney done? Absolutely nothing. So she needs to go. But to the point, right? So that's one argument. Liz Cheney is bad. Liz Cheney needs to go. But we should not be a party of foreign by Trump. We should be a party of foreign by the ideas and the ideals that Mr. Trump articulated of manufacturing, of protecting jobs at home, of protecting the borders, of no longer intervening all across the world. Like America first. That's what the Republican Party should be about. Doesn't matter your race, your color, your creed. If you're American, you're respected and you're loved. You're part of the American family. A nationalistic party is what the Republican Party should be. So I don't know. Maybe that alienates both factions, but that's my take on things.
Well, again, so a couple points. Let's first go to this first tweet that I pulled up today. Take it for what it's worth. Again, it's an NBC poll, but it's a poll question they asked in 2019 too. So you know, take the numbers with a grain of salt. But they asked Republicans, do you consider yourself to be more a supporter of Donald Trump or more of a supporter of the Republican Party? In June of 19, it was Trump 52, GOP 38. Now it's GOP 50, Trump 44. So definitely some movement there. And, you know, with time, I think that's going to happen. But I wanted to have this discussion because, again, I've been having it quite a bit at work. And I see more and more posts about this, maybe kind of tied in the whole the DeWine thing. And, you know, again, Trump will be 78. We don't know what his health is going to be. And if it's all about Trump, we're going to have nobody else to run.
Agreed.
Who's going to be our candidate? That's why it should be a party of his policies. Give these candidates, whoever they are, whether it's a DeSantis, a Tim Scott, a Nikki Haley, a whoever it's going to be Nikki Haley. I'm just throwing out potential people. But my idea is throw it out there. Have this be the policies of our party. Let's see which candidates live by those policies as a leader, implement those policies, and then come 2024, you know, if Trump doesn't run – which I personally don't think he's going to run, but that's just
– I don't think he will either. I'm with you.
That's just me thinking. That's not animosity towards him. It's just me, my line of thinking on it. We have candidates that we could choose from that are truly America first. But if we're so focused on Trump, and who's Trump going to endorse and all this, we're losing sight of building a party for the future, a party of his ideas that could really be a great party moving forward. So – That's where I'm coming from on this. The other point is you mentioned like Liz Cheney, think of Mitt Romney, John McCain, Kasich, and all of them. The problem I think, you know, I think Romney's starting to see now, you befriended the left because of your animosity towards Trump. You befriended the media because of your animosity towards Trump. They just used you to be that anti-Trump Republican, say, look at there's infighting with the Republicans. Look at the last three major Republicans on the ticket pre-Trump all hate Trump's guts now. But they're just used in that way. It's not like by doing this, they've been able to get anything legislatively accomplished. There's not like the Democrats are being bipartisan and working with them. They use them. And do we want to have politicians in there who are just being used by the left to advance their agenda, which is, I think, what's happening here. We have a couple comments. Chris Conlin in the chat. Thanks for tuning in, Chris. People are tribal. There's so much hate for Donald Trump. People on the left now are stuck. They have to back Biden blindly. It's kind of interesting how people just gloss over Biden's obvious issues just because, again, it's
his dementia. I'm not gloating. I'm not happy about that. I think it's unfortunate.
But we've talked about it plenty. There's certainly he's not nearly what he was back in when he was vice president. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
And then he said people only know Meghan McCain because of Tim Dillon. Let's be real.
Meghan McCain. Hey, Did you know, this is going to shock all of us, did you know Meghan McCain's father was John McCain? Did you know that?
Who knew?
Did you know Meghan McCain, her father, was John McCain? Do you know who John McCain is?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah, he was a really important guy. He was basically the president, even though he wasn't the president. And Meghan McCain, by being the daughter of John McCain, was like basically the president of the United States. I don't know if you are aware of this, right? And Meghan McCain is like, yeah, it's Meghan McCain. Meghan McCain, her father was John McCain.
John McCain.
Did I mention John McCain? Because that was her father. And, you know, when some people, they ask, like, what would Jesus do? You know, do you remember WWJD? What would Jesus do?
Yeah, the little things around the
little bracelets.
This is
the
rubber
right?
band, by the way.
Yeah. I thought it was a WWJD. Oh, wow. Meghan McCain goes, what would John McCain do? Because John McCain was her father. I don't know if Meghan McCain, John McCain. Yeah, that was her father.
They kind of look alike.
Yeah, she's built like her father. I hate to say that. No, I can't stand her. I think she's annoying. She's dumb. She's not very smart. The only reason she's anywhere is because of her father, right? Can I just give a rant about politicians? I hate like, oh, my dad was a politician, therefore I'm equipped to talk on politics. No, shut up. Go away. Like Meghan McCain is a good example of that. The Bush daughters kind of got politically active a couple years ago. Yeah.
Andrew Bush else? Or whatever her name is.
Yeah. And it's like, who else is there? There are a bunch of these bozos. It's like, who cares, right? Like, just screw off. That's part of the reason why Donald Trump won is, don't forget, we were facing the prospect of Jeb Bush. Like, the Republican Party president would have been George Bush.
It says a lot because of how low his brother's approval ratings were.
Yeah.
At the end of his term, that was the best we had to offer.
It was the best we had to offer. So Trump saved us. And Hillary Clinton, whose husband was Bill Clinton, right? I hate the idea of American politics turning into some aristocracy where it's like, oh hey, by the way, Michael Metzinger, let's shift gears a bit. Is Bob Hagen going to run for Senate? This is my favorite fucking topic. Sorry, I shouldn't swear. Is Bob Hagen run for Senate?
Wouldn't that be great? You could ride on the railroad and get some votes.
Yeah, is he? Well, I heard. So here's a hot take for you, okay? Michael Rooley is going to run for Congress, right?
That'll be a topic for our next show, by the way.
Yeah, I won't get into it now. Bob Hagen could run for Congress too, if Tim Ryan's.
Would I just love that.
Congressman Bob Hagen. You know, when I think of leaders, I don't think of Bob Hagen. But when I think of who gets drunk at a hipster bar and calls a black man buckwheat, I think of Bob Hagen. I don't know about you. Right?
Yep.
Yeah, that happened.
It does say a lot, though, that, you know, not to go off course here too much.
Yeah.
That he lost that mayoral race back in whenever that was, because he won the Democrat primary.
Yeah.
And then Jay Williams, you know, the day before entered the race, and he ended up losing to the independent Jay Williams. It is pretty remarkable for something like that to happen. You know, you were talking about McCain real quick, not to get too off course, but as we wrap up the show.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I was talking about today with my coworker is legislative accomplishments of Trump. And I think we talked about how there weren't maybe as many as we would have hoped. You know, he mentioned healthcare and McCain. I think the issue with the Republicans were they put so much focus on being repeal Obamacare. They never really had a great plan in terms of replacing it or anything like that. And I think there were some issues, you know, with what we could do there. I know Trump got rid of the individual mandate. And from a legislative perspective, I think his best piece of legislation was the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And he did what he could from an executive perspective with the border wall, you know, enforcing the immigration rules, tariffs. Legislatively, I think that's where, and I think maybe you even touched on it, there wasn't a ton there from a legislative perspective, which was disappointing, especially considering they had full control for his first 2 years.
Trump was very – this is part of the reason why I don't know if I want Trump as president again. he was very good at rallying up the people, and he had a lot of popular support. But instead of channeling that to permanent legislative victories, he outsourced – he's not a detail guy, right? He outsourced all the details to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan is you know, not my favorite person on this planet. But he – they passed their tax cut for big companies, okay? And then all the other issues kind of went by the wayside. Trump didn't win – on lowering taxes. Trump ran on deporting Mexicans, putting a Muslim ban on, and building a wall. Okay. I mean, these were all his policies. I know it's like, you know, that's why Trump won. And then the Republican Party proceeded to do absolutely nothing on immigration. When they had the majority, they should have passed some sort of RACE Act where we went to a merit-based immigration system, points-based, where we dramatically curtailed the legal immigration numbers and only brought in highly skilled individuals, right? Colorblind, race-blind, all favor that, but only skilled immigration. They didn't do that. They didn't have a plan for Obamacare. They have a lot of plans, right? And Trump, instead of kind of shepherding him along, just kind of outsourced it. So I think Trump's a good guy on the campaign trail. Like I think a DeSantis who's had executive experience is the ideal guy. He gets it. He can govern. He can implement policy. And Trump could help him on the campaign trail. But I don't know if I want Trump leading it again.
Yeah. And another thing just to talk about DeSantis maybe as we conclude, because I'm very, very high on DeSantis. I think he's that perfect type. Like you just said, he gets it. I think he's very savvy politically. He knows how to tactfully go after the media when he needs to. And he's just a good overall leader, regardless of where he stood on COVID. He's just I just like a lot of kind of how he stands. He's practical, which I like. And there's three polls out today in Florida. One, I think, was more by a Democrat outfit, and two others that were more, I think I don't know if they were nonpartisan or what, but the lowest approval he had was 53%. The highest was 60%. And in the one poll, I forget which one, maybe it's the one where he's at 55% approval rating, he was up by double digits against the potential Democrats in those races. And it's important to note he only won that race by like 40,000 votes, which was like – it was like 51.1 to 49.9.
Yeah,
it was like – razor thin, and I never expected him to even win, because if you remember, Scott was pulling pretty decent, you know, slightly ahead or tied in his race, but DeSantis was down most of the time in the polls. I think virtually all the polls he was down in the weeks leading up, and then he ended up winning. He's done a great job of building his group of supporters, I guess, or people who back his policies. And if he wins a state like Florida by double digits, I feel like it would be hard. I honestly do believe Trump would be like, you know what? Not too many people could do that.
Agreed.
And it's, you know, I know Florida's moving to the right, or at least it shifted a little bit there, especially in 2020. But double digits in Florida, remember, this is the state that decided 2000 and decided a few other elections too. I mean, that's remarkable. So he's doing something right, and he has broad support, especially with independents. And I think that is what we should be looking for in terms of a candidate. I'm not saying he's going to be my guy, but there should be other candidates out there kind of look to see what DeSantis is doing from a policy perspective, how he's handling the media, and hopefully we have a decent bench to run in 2024.
I agreed wholeheartedly. Well, listen, I can't wait for the next episode, because I can't wait to talk about Bob Hagan, Michael Rooley running for Congress. I can't wait. Should we do the sponsor?
Yeah, actually, Kurt is in the
chat.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I just have to ask Dane, who is the sponsor?
Our sponsor today is Mott's Fruit Snacks, because when you absolutely have to eat sugar, but you want to pretend that you're so healthy, Mott's Fruit Snacks. Have you, Michael, ever thought of, like, what's it like to eat rubber that just like rubber and sugar put together? Have you ever had that thought?
Well, I've had those plenty of times, and that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, right. It's like, hey, it's all the consistency of rubber, melted rubber on a hot summer day, with like over sugar. Lots of family fruit snacks. It's sponsored.
They are good. Although I'm a big fan of the Welch's ones myself.
I am too. I am too.
Those ones, I think, those ones get stuck in my teeth. Those moss ones.
They're sticky.
They're very sticky. The Welch's ones are a little better. A couple comments in the chat. Chris, he says, totally agree. I see DeSantis as a front runner. Never knew y'all did this show. Big fan already. Definitely will be back, guys. Well, thank you, Chris. Definitely tell people about our show. Tommy Metz, Michael is the king of fruit snacks. Fruit by the foot for life. Kurt Blackburn, I've said, I think the Republican Party needs someone that can carry the populist nationalist position that Trump did without the brash rhetoric. I tend to agree there.
I agree.
Tommy Metz is continuing on here. Gushers throw water. Like a fat
jaw. Listen, fruit by the foot. First of all, I don't think it's really a foot long. I think that the units are off.
Yeah, just a bit.
Fruit by the foot tastes like they always had seeds in it. Am I crazy that there were like little seeds in fruit by the foot?
Was it like fruit by the foot, or was it the fruit roll up?
Fruit roll ups never had seeds.
They did.
Listen, a fruit roll up has nothing to do with fruit. Like, a fruit roll-up is like somebody at the Chevron Corporation was like, hey, we have this byproduct. What the fuck do we do with it? We can't sell it. And they're like, hey, let's mix it with sugar and food coloring and sell it to 8-year-olds. And they're like, done. That's fruit roll-ups, right? Fruit by the foot had like little seeds to make you think you were eating like part of a strawberry. Am I crazy?
Tommy Metz would know this. I'm not sure if that was the case. Maybe there were certain types of flavors that were like that. I don't remember that. And I thought that was fruit roll-ups.
No, it was fruit. No, fruit roll-ups are made out of oil byproducts, bud. Okay. Fruit by the foot are
slight
made.
Slight seed action for Tommy Metz.
They have some seeds. Yeah. I mean, who knows if they're actually seeds. They're probably just like ants that like climbed into the jar and got smushed up. Right. And here's, you know, Fatty Dane, like, oh, I'm eating seeds. I'm healthy, mom. You know, give me more. But I don't know.
It's pretty funny that we conclude talking about fruit snacks, because I do eat at least one pack a day. I make it a point to have my wife buy them. Although I have two young boys at home, we don't let them eat them. Those fruit snacks are for me.
Are they the Welch's kind?
The Welch's are typically what I would eat. Although my wife does eat them as well. Yeah, she likes them. It's pretty. It's funny when I pack a lunch and bring it to work, and they're like, "What are you eating?" I'm like, "I got some fruit snacks here. Like, I'm still in school."
Wow,
they're good. It's a good. It's like good. It's a good dessert for lunch.
Yeah. If you hate yourself, yeah, it's perfect, right? It's like, I'm miserable. I'm gonna eat some fruit snacks. It's perfect. It's the spot.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll conclude. So, thanks everybody for tuning in and the action in the chat tonight. We'll get the podcast up, and it'll be available for download tomorrow. And next episode, we'll definitely talk Michael Rooley. We'll try to.
Can you get him on?
I know he followed me a couple weeks ago on Twitter, so I need to find a means to getting him on. If we could figure out a night where it works for everybody, maybe we could find from his schedule what works for him, and then we'll coordinate with you. And would love to have him on, even if it's just for 20 minutes. I really want to kind of get a pulse on him and asking him how it is working with DeWine. I'm curious from a legislative perspective what their thoughts are with DeWine. Does he have to walk a tightrope there in what he says? I haven't heard him say too much about DeWine, to be honest with you. So my inkling is he's okay with him. Maybe doesn't agree with him on everything, but maybe, again, has to watch what he says, because a lot of his most ardent supporters are the people who hate, despise DeWine with a passion. So,
hey, that's quick question. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish your statement.
No, that's all I have.
Tommy says you drink a case of Cherry Coke per day and you eat fruit snacks. How are you rail thin? Are you just, you know, doing Coke?
One pop a day. I'm very blessed to have good metabolism. I'm steady weight for the last 10 years, and I don't do my. I try to do some basic workouts. I have the last 6 weeks or so. Not that I need to. I just got to do it. But I'm fortunate. I know I'm fortunate. I know it's going to come back to bite me one day. But I've given up pop for Lent. Have lost no weight whatsoever. I drink pop a day. I still don't gain any weight. So it's like lots of Coke. Cherry Coke is the way. So yeah, I like my Cherry Coke.
Yeah, I like Coke too. Okay, thanks everybody.
Yes, we will conclude the show. Thank you all. Take care.